now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is a podcast from The Times. Go to thetimes.co.uk.
Welcome to The Game, the podcast that knew England would beat Spain all along. Joining me this week are Alison Rudd, Tony Cascarino, and from some lovely place in the Midlands, it's Peter Lansley. Later on, I'll be asking the panel if it really matters what a stadium is called. But let's start with some international football. Who's excited? Okay, how about we start at Wembley? I'm not going to get into this whole, like, England beat the world champions, so they're world champions, because, of course, Argentina's beaten them, Portugal has beaten them, even little old Italy has beaten them. But, Peter, you're the biggest England fan here. Feels kind of good to beat Spain, right?
It does, absolutely. I mean, it's a nice notch on the bedpost, so to speak, metaphorically speaking. And also now we're going to make
some
here.
Pardon? Did you say notch on the bedpost?
I did, yeah.
Oh, okay, all right.
Yeah, in football terminology, in football terms, I think we can call it that.
Okay.
And we've shown that there are going to be superior opponents to that, to England. We know that. So let's acknowledge that, see where we are in the rankings, and work off that. When we beat, when we face superior opponents, we need a different plan. We need to be able to say, okay, we're not going to control possession and have Rooney and Wilshere just marauding about with lovely 1-2s. So what are we going to do to beat superior opponents?
Well, Alison, the answer seemed to me to be, let's be very defensive, let's play 4-5-1, let's have Milner as an adjunct fullback, and let's try to score a goal on a set piece, which is kind of what happened, right?
Yeah, I think the victory poses quite a deep philosophical question for England, actually, because England decided not to try to play in a particular style or play to any particular strengths. They focused entirely on what they could do to stop the superior team playing. And in so doing, we saw what is good about England, which is energy and commitment and passion. And what I like most about the England performance was there's a sense of team and camaraderie, which often you don't get when they're playing teams that they're supposed to beat. But the philosophical point is, that was very Capello-esque. It was tactical. This is what we have to do to beat Spain. We do park the bus. And no one in the England camp is pretending that isn't what the tactic was. But what are you left with? When England play a team they are expected to beat, what are they left with? What is the Englishness that they forewent, that they didn't apply in order to face Spain? What are they left with? And I think, if you're going to learn from beating Spain, I think the point you have to take from it is that we don't have a style the way that Spain have a very distinctive style. You have to say, why don't England do this? Why don't we take each opponent, dissect what they've got, and apply spirit, passion, and Premier League style go-get-em at 'em to each opponent?
But are you suggesting changing it for each opponent, chameleon-like, be the uber-pragmatists? Or are you suggesting
playing like this against everybody? Yes, I actually would. I think almost, as it comes out of my mouth, that sounds like quite a scary thing to say, but I don't think we have anything else. I think actually that might be the way to be reasonably successful at the Euros.
Which is what? I'm sorry, change depending on the opponent, simply play like this against everybody?
No.
No, horses for courses,
yeah.
Surely.
That's what I'm saying. Right, but that's kind of been Capello's shtick all along, hasn't it?
Well, no, but there's been an underlying current that England are reasonably high in the FIFA rankings,
yeah.
And are the you know, we invented football. England have some sort of superiority complex. Well, if we can abandon that and just play every team with an element of humility, I suppose. That's what I'm saying. There was a lot of humility in facing Spain, in saying, we have nothing to offer. We have nothing to offer. We'll just let Darren Bent buzz around up front. We don't even care if he gets the ball or not. Let's just stop Spain playing.
To be fair, though, Alison, on that point, when's the last time England played somebody as good as Spain? Somebody who, on paper, was clearly so far ahead throughout Capello's tenure?
I think you could go through every opponent and say they had, if not in ranking terms, better than England, they have something superior in terms of, you could say, this is how they play. This is what we're faced with, and England usually ignore it. It's all about what England have, you know, whether you play Frank Lampard or not,
good,
or Jack Wilshere or not, and it's all about the individuals. It's whether Rooney plays as an off striker or in midfield. It's all insular.
But Cass, isn't that good if you're playing against opponents who aren't as good as you or who you feel are equal to you? And again, I go back to, I think just about everybody England has played, even the ones that they lost to under Capello's tenure, with the exception of Spain, generally England felt that they could beat, and probably rightly so. I mean, am I wrong? If that's the case, shouldn't you go and play your own game against them rather than...
Someone tell me then, what is our own game?
Well, I'd say the game that led you to qualify for two major tournaments, win 9 and 10.
But what is it?
Well, under Capello, the game has been trying to base it around Rooney and Gerrard earlier. I'm talking about throughout the tenure. Later on, Wilshere. Obviously, all those guys weren't there, so I would imagine he probably thought, okay, well, best thing to do is let's convince the players that they can beat Spain and they can do it without so many of the big stars. Because, you know, I'm sorry, let's not forget, this was an England side without England's best player, in my opinion, Wayne Rooney, without Ashley Young, without Steven Gerrard, without, you know, we can giggle
Jack
about
Wilshere,
Jack Wilshere, John Terry. I mean, yeah. You know, like, look at the guys who are out there, right? You now know that Julian Lescott, at least once in his lifetime, and Phil Jagielka, these two guys can go on the pitch against all these little dudes who run around and the ball's like stuck to their pitch or whatever, stuck to their feet, and they can do a decent job.
I thought they both played incredibly well.
Yeah, I think one problem we're going to have, you know, me looking on and watching England is...
Say we?
No, I mean us here looking at the game. I don't mean we as in English people.
Okay.
I found it that you are relying on a lot of things to go for you on the day. If you're going to attempt to play that tactic, which I can understand, because there isn't many teams in, well, there isn't any world teams, I don't think, who can keep the ball as well as Spain do with the movement and the technical ability. But you've got to rely on them missing chances, which they did. I mean, Fabregas came on the last 15 minutes. He had 3 chances to score a goal. He could have walked off with a hat-trick, Fabregas. And I think if you're going to rely on teams missing chances, your goalkeeper playing well, your defenders making last-ditch challenges, I think it could work on a one-off occasion. I'm not quite sure going into the Euros next year, if they meet Spain and they adopt the same tactic, I think they'll come off second best, because I think 9 times out of 10 you get beat. So I do think England have to offer a lot more problems than they did to negate the game so... We're just redundant as an adventurous team going forward, because that's what England were. Alisson touched on Darren Bent. Darren Bent will never get goals, really, on a regular basis, if he was to ask to play that role on a regular basis. Look, the difference is, would you get away with playing Sweden on Tuesday night and attempting to do the same thing? The crowd would be booing.
No, you can't, but you are playing a very different opponent, aren't you, Cash?
That's what Alisson's just touched on. The tactics of you know, every opponent, do you employ what you think's your best way of beating them? Well, that's fine, but you've got to construct a team that everybody is off the same hymn sheet, singing off the same hymn sheet in everything they do. You can't just keep switching from adventurous to defensive and negative. You've got to have it. It's got to be a lot more than just that.
So you can't be sure, you shouldn't be pragmatic and chameleon-like. That's what you're saying.
Well, if you're going to attempt to do it, you've got to make sure that every player... You've got 3 days to work with these players between
these
international duty. Sorry?
These guys managed to do it. I mean, that was pretty much
Spain
at full strength. I mean, you can argue Puyol maybe, but I mean... You know, the guy's been hurt for the last 18 months.
Money, so. For love nor money, if Spain were to play England again tomorrow in the Euros, would you really think that England would beat them again?
Well, I don't know, but
a very one-off chance.
But I mean, I'm spoken to enough people in Spain. Yeah, it's a friendly and so on. Mm. But
if England would have come off with a defeat, which quite could conceivably have happened on Saturday, Capello would have got buried. For it's attempting.
Not, but I have to say this. Capello's not going to be buried anymore. No. And not any more than he already is. I mean, I've lived in this country for 16 years. And with the exception of sort of immediately after you guys getting knocked out of a World Cup or Euros, I don't think I've seen things this bad in terms of confidence and belief. And I think it's pretty clear what's going on. I mean, the FA have created a lame duck manager situation, and we can go back and ask ourselves, should they have just eaten his wages and got rid of him after the World Cup or whatever else? They're certainly not helping the situation now with all this Redknapp chatter and all the leaks that come out of there and the new manager and this and that. So now nobody's excited. Nobody cares.
I disagree.
I don't think so. I mean, Peter, in terms of the media, I mean, if you read some of these newspapers, it's kind of like, you know, he's just a yammering fool. His English doesn't make any sense. You know, it wasn't a problem when he just moved here, funnily enough. I mean, I'm saying nobody cares. I don't mean that there aren't a lot of England fans who care, but from the perspective of the media, it's almost as if we're expecting a colossal flop from England and nobody seems to be excited. Or am I wrong?
Okay, the sense of excitement might have diminished. But what I think people would get most excited about is England winning or getting to the last four of a major tournament. I think now that expectations have gone down, the golden generation's moved on, etc., people have stopped thinking, yep, we can whoop Spain, Germany, France, play them at their own game, be better than them at their game. Instead of that, people are saying, okay, Ferdinand's creaking, you know, Terry and Gerrard, Lampard might just hang on for this tournament, but we are bringing a new generation through who are more adaptable, who are comfortable on the ball and therefore can play different systems. With expectations lower, I think we will do better next summer.
I want to throw this out there, Alison, because I ask myself right now, who is guaranteed to start for England at Euro 2012? I mean, reasonably guaranteed. And I'd submit, I can only think of three people, and one of them is going to be suspended. And that's Rooney, Hart, and Ashley Cole. It seems to me that in one way or another, every other position is up for grabs. Is that an accurate reading?
I think it's probably easier to say who's guaranteed a squad place than an actual starting lineup. But that brings us back to the beginning, which is that's the way it should be. Your starting lineup should be not dictated by who's the most fated player at that moment. Oh, you know, it might be that Ashley Young's playing really well. Oh, he's got to be in the starting lineup. No, he hasn't. He might not be the right player for the opposition we draw at the Euros. Let's be pragmatic.
So you don't have a problem with that? Yeah.
No, Cass, turn it on its head. I think it's a good thing.
Cass, is it a strength when you only have three people who are pretty much penciled in as starters?
Well, I could certainly add a fourth in. I think Scotty Parker is guaranteed. Mm. I think his performances, I'd be amazed if he was to be left out.
Apart from Scott Parker, anybody else?
Well, it again comes to fitness. I think if you're looking at Wiltshire, I think he's a definite starter if he's fit. And I think if Gerrard comes back from his injury and he's flying, he's a definite starter because you could not leave Steven Gerrard out. So I would argue five or six. I mean, look, they're down to injuries and some of the ones we've already mentioned might not make it because you can easily get injured before the start of tournaments.
Peter, anybody else that we've overlooked who you think will definitely? Because none of you have mentioned the England captain right now.
No, well, he's creaking as things are, isn't he? On off the field. He hasn't been in his best form this season. We dissected that Arsenal-Chelsea game, didn't we? That Chelsea-Arsenal game. So no, I don't think John Terry is an automatic pick, especially the progress that Phil Jones is making. I know right and left.
One other on Spain a little bit, because I mean they really are, I think, on the cusp of being considered one of the greatest sides ever. I think if they win the Euros, it's going to be hard to argue that they're not. No team has ever won three straight major international tournaments. Germany and Brazil have won two straight, as has Spain. You know, they had this ridiculous win streak, this ridiculous undefeated streak. But from what you guys saw, did they look right to you? Were they what you expected? Did you think, because this sort of system of not having it was even more of a free-flowing strikerless system than we saw at the World Cup. Alison?
Well, I enjoyed I enjoyed what I saw, and I found it really hypnotic. I couldn't take my eyes off Alonso, which is partly because I miss him desperately from Anfield. But that, it's... and I think a lot of build-up reflected that it's almost alien football. We don't see that very often in this country, that patience. And there's something special about work ethic combined with the high level of technical ability. The Spain we saw at Wembley, I mean, I don't know what the camp's like, but they do have this problem with friendlies, and I do wonder if they just... I mean, the very best teams use friendlies in the right way, which is to sort of try things out. And I can't, you know, if they are losing so many friendlies, I can only conclude that they don't use them because it's all about the winning. I mean, if you're world champion, you don't really need to prove you can win. You use it just to try out different things and take a more relaxed approach. I wouldn't conclude from the performance at Wembley that they're going to creak at the Euros, no.
One thing's for sure, their midfield and going forward and creating chances and wherever they take them is sensational. You know, they just open you up at will, and they do it with incredible technical ability and players that are always on the move. I think the only weakness is Spain is their back four. I do think they're vulnerable. They look like you can score at times against them, and I think if teams are a bit braver, you could even expose their back four more than England attempted to do. But with the ball, there's no team like it, I think. What I'm seeing, because it's, I mean, from Silva to Fabregas to Xavi to Iniesta, Villa, their movement is just incredible to watch. The moment they lose the ball, teams don't really seriously want to try and ask too many questions against them, which I do think that you can do.
I want to leave you guys with one thought here. I am struck by how Iker Casillas, who passed Zubizarreta with winning his 126th cap, or I think he equalized Zubizarreta's record. I mean, he's the undoubted number one. He's got 3-4 years left. And I look at Pepe Reina, and I look at Victor Valdez, Valdez Catalan, and these guys are so happy to be a part of the Spanish team, even though they get as much playing time for Spain as you do, Cass. And then I look at England's reserve goalkeepers. I look at Paul Robinson, Robert Green, people like that. People who turn their back on their country. And I'm not English, care less, but it really just strikes me as cheap and selfish and stupid what these people are doing. And you're not English either, in some ways.
But I can answer that question.
Yeah.
Because I turned up, played 19 years. I'm not going to give myself a pat on the back here, by the way.
Have you retired from international? Did you ever make it?
No, I've got 2-match suspension, so I still can't play the first 2 games of the Euros. I turned up at 38, and from the years of 34 to 38, I was really just coming along to be a squad member. I still felt I had a role to play. Not only to let everybody know that the importance of playing for Ireland, for me, it was very big. And I think Reina and certainly Valdez turn up for Spain, not because they're World Cup winners. I think there's a bigger issue about the loyalty, because you need loyalty, unity, a group that everyone's singing off the same hymn sheet. You're really pulling in the same direction. And it's a desire to win. I know, and I won't name names, I know there's a good few England players who saw international football as a hindrance. They just thought, well, I don't want to go down to Wembley, sit on my bench, be away from the missus and the kids for the weekend. I'm going to spend 4 or 5 days in London. I'm not going to play. Not really bothered. And I know some of them. And I've heard that comment made. And that really typifies to me the problem you have with a group, because the whole 22-man squad, is what, or 23 when you go away, has to be together. And people who are not playing don't have an ego, a selfish ego about not playing. You still work really hard for your fellow striker, for your fellow goalkeeper, that everyone's working together. And I sadly think that's where the goalkeeping problems come from. There's too many selfish egos.
You might be right when it comes to outfield players, but I think it's different for the goalkeepers. I think the England goalkeepers that have got cross with their country, and or you'd call it turning their back on the country, it's not because they haven't been picked. It's because they've been picked and then treated badly. Or, You have like, you make one error. Well. You make one error as a goalkeeper. It's worth 20 from an outfield player, and you're made to a scapegoat. Each goalkeeper who's like Robert Green, I think he's a very fine goalkeeper. He's been, and I know he can quite legitimately claim not to have been treated well. Pepe Reina has never been treated badly. He just accepts. There's a better goalkeeper than me, and I love being the backup.
Sorry, you think Pepe Reina thinks, oh, Iker Casillas is clearly better than me? You really think he believes that?
I think he accepts that it's a reasonable assumption. He's a great goalkeeper,
Casillas. Okay, so when I'm Robert Green, I go to the World Cup and I make a massive blunder, which ultimately, that on its own, by the way, leaving aside how terrible England were, is responsible for England playing Germany in the next round. I should feel slighted because I get dropped for David James, yes? That's and then I should go and retire from international football. You know what? I'm glad. I'm going to have a real rant here. You know, I am glad that these people's careers have gone nowhere. Okay, Paul Robinson plays for a freak show team, right, with freak show owners and a manager who's about to get the sack, right? I'm happy for him. Enjoy the championship next year, right? The other one with Sam Allardyce and Karen Brady and whatever, you enjoy the championship too with your fellow England players who went to the World Cup and you got relegated and Kevin Nolan on 70 grand a week, right? Because that is your level right now. I don't understand how you can possibly turn your back on your country when you're in mid-career, when there's really only one person in front of you, by the way, and Joe Hart. I think the real reason is that these people are terrified that Joe Hart might get injured or suspended, and then it's going to be them in the spotlight for England again. And this way, they don't have to, they can just avoid it. They can go play for crummy teams. Well, one of them plays for a crummy team where it doesn't matter how many goals he concedes. The other one plays for West Ham, where they're going to steamroller everybody in the championship, and that's fine, and nobody cares. But I mean, I don't understand this, and I think this is different, by the way, from Carragher and Scholes, who put in many, many years playing for England before they announced their retirement.
Can I during the World Cup 90, I played centre forward, and in the qualifying campaign leading up to World Cup 90, I was a top goal scorer. I had a fantastic tournament. Got to the World Cup, we played England, we drew 1-1. It was a bit of a horrible night, as you remember, and a horrible.
Listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Game. Didn't play particularly well, but played okay. We played Egypt on the next game. We drew 0-0 and I missed a golden chance in the game. And on the Wednesday, I was leaving the dinner on the night and Jack said, "Can I have a word?" And I was like, "Yeah." And he went, "You're not playing." And I went, "Sorry?" He said, "You're not playing against the Dutch. I'm dropping you." And I said, "Jack, I done all these things in the qualifying campaign. I had an indifferent game against Egypt. Me to go, good chance." He went, "No, you were crap. You're out. Quinny's in." And it was as cold as that. And I remember thinking, wow, but that's what it is. If you are going to make a horrendous mistake or miss a chance, not just being a goalkeeper, if you're going to be a centre forward and you miss a golden opportunity to win your game, managers are prepared to make decisions like that. And he was proved right, because Noel Quinn in the game against Dutch went in, played the game and scored. Well, got us through. So it's proven right.
And if Quinn had played terribly and you guys had lost 10-0 and you would have gone home in disgrace, it would have been Jack Charlton who would have been sacked,
exactly.
And not you.
Exactly. So that's the line.
Let's give Peter the last word on this.
I think it's because, I know we're not allowed to turn on the media because we're part of it, but I think it's because when an England goalkeeper makes a big mistake in a big tournament, we make him a national scapegoat. And it's not just that he's been treated badly because he's dropped or whatever. I don't think that's being treated badly. It's because we turn them into national scapegoats because there's such a negative attention. When a team lets a goal in and it's the goalkeeper who's the last man, we make him an absolute villain. I think that's why everyone else has turned their back on the
job. You started off by saying, why is Spain so united? Why do the goalkeepers stick with the team when they're not playing? It's cultural. In this country, even at kids' level, that's why we don't play the beautiful game, because at kids' level we don't. At kids' level, goalkeeper is always a scapegoat.
David Seaman, who I'm not as biggest fan, I'm just going to leave you with this thought, who I'm certainly not as biggest fan as a goalkeeper, he's made some colossal blunders for England. Absolutely colossal one. You remember that? Let's all do the Seaman. Let's all, you remember that? Yeah? Okay, did he turn his back on his country after he was absolutely crucified? No. He was always available for selection until the very, very end. Because I think David Seaman is a man. Okay, our debate this week, I think we'll pit traditionalists against real-world, laissez-faire, free marketeers like Cascarino there, the poker star. But it started at St. James Park, which, of course, will now be known as the Sports Direct Arena. Now, a little bit of background on this. Sports Direct is a company owned by Mike Ashley, and as I understand it, he's not actually paying to have his logo on there, but he's doing it to sort of show other corporations around the world, look, you know, this corporate logo here gets this much exposure, and isn't it great, and don't you want to give us money to have your logo on here? Personally, I feel a lot better about it if Sports Direct actually paid Newcastle for the rights. It's still Mike Ashley moving money around, and also if Newcastle qualify for Europe and stay in Europe, it would also have important financial fair play implications. Instead, he's done it for free, whatever, that's his decision. But I think we can all agree that this is not something that's likely to go away. Alison, let's start with you. How do you feel about it? Does your sensitivity as an old school football fan, does that clash with the real world corporate needs?
No, I don't think it does.
You don't
care? I think the sensible way to view this is, and it's the Newcastle fans that are horrified, is, well, aren't you lucky, Newcastle fans, that you have a stadium, despite never having won anything, you have a stadium that's big enough in the modern football world to be full and make money from seat tickets, and you don't need a new stadium. If you did need a new stadium, it would be called something else, wouldn't it? So you can stay where you are in your traditional ground and make a bit of dosh by having someone apply naming rights to it. I think of all the scenarios that there are swinging around in the Premier League and below, clubs trying to make ends meet, that is a pretty decent one.
Cass, are you buying into this realpolitik?
Well, football's moved on from a long, long time ago where, you know, clubs are looking at every angle to make money. I can sort of understand that he wants to name the club for sporting rights, but I also agree with what you said, that, you know, if he was prepared to dip in his own pocket, but he might argue, well, he's done a lot of that already.
Yeah, I have some numbers for you. Over the past 5 years, Newcastle have lost on average £20 million. Over the past 5 years, Newcastle have lost on average close to £20 million. And that's despite the fact that they've actually made profits on player sales in most of those years. If you imagine Newcastle breaking even on player sales all these years, then their losses would be closer to £30 million a year over the last five seasons. I don't really like Mike Ashley, but it's not as if he's necessarily putting in his own pocket, but that's all debt that's piled onto the club, and the club is his asset. So effectively, this is costing Mike Ashley money year after year.
which I'm sure he loathes doing. You know, I spoke to someone who's close to the very to Bristol City chairman who dipped into his own pocket of 12 million in a championship for one season, and you sort of think, well, these billionaire owners, they don't get very wealthy by keep dipping in their own pockets. They want to make these businesses work, and if it means naming the club rights, I'm sure the fans would be okay as long as they're seeing the benefit on the football pitch, because fans live and die by how their team's doing. I mean, it's quite ironic that Newcastle, all these sporting rights is coming out now when Newcastle have had an incredible start to the season.
I don't think it's ironic. I think it's probably,
I think it's a bit of a coincidence.
It's not burying bad news.
If you're going to sell the naming rights, sell them when everyone thinks are talking about the club.
He made the announcement at a time during international break, at a time when Newcastle's next home game was on December 3rd. So some 2.5 weeks later, I guarantee you that if he wouldn't have made the announcement on the eve of their next home match, that would have been foolish. But of course, he had to tell people at some point that this was happening. To me, the central issue here is you talk to football fans and you ask what they want, and I think we in the media and a lot of club owners say, "Well, football fans want to win; they're putting pressure on us." Do you want? I don't think so. I think the football fans who go to matches, I think what they want is they want a team that's stable, they want a team that's debt-free, they want prices to be low, and they want a team that goes out and tries every game. I don't think they necessarily want to live the dream Peter Ridsdale style. I mean, am I wrong in this, Alison?
Well, they've almost got that at Newcastle now, haven't they? Almost by default. I mean, I do think Newcastle fans need to slap themselves around the face a bit. You know, these are good times, and they could get very, very much better if they go with it in a sense, without going crazy because they're playing well at the moment. It's a very astute business tactic to get new money into the club at a time when everyone's writing good things about them and their results are good. That is astute. I mean, you can't just keep clinging hold of your hatred of the man. He's there. Let's see if he got in a manager you thought was going to be rubbish. He's turned out to be really rather good.
For now.
Give him credit. Well, all football is for now.
Should the fans make that stand? And if they do that, should actually listen?
Well, first and foremost, I mean, you touched on Peter Ridsdale earlier, and I hate it when board members, chairman, whoever, chief execs of football clubs act like fans, because they're not in roles to act like fans. They have to use their brain.
I don't mind when they act like fans and they put their own money in.
Well, you got
when they put somebody else's money in or just pile the debt on the club, that's when I have a problem.
Yeah. Well, I think as long as you educate your fans and you explain and you're very open, you're very transparent about what you're doing and the reasons why you're doing it, fans will understand. And then I think they'll side with your way of thinking, that it's like moving a new stadium. Everton fans probably hate to move from where they are at the moment, but the club's trying to explain they have to move to continue to be a successful club in the Premiership.
And it won't be called Goodison Park, will it? But no one will talk about that being the big deal, that it's not called Goodison anymore.
From some of the feedback I've had via Twitter and stuff is that people can accept it more if you're moving to a new ground. Like when Arsenal moved to the Emirates, or when Bolton moved to the Reebok Stadium, that you can kind of accept that.
Well, because it was exceptional. Arsenal fans knew they were getting a fantastic deal.
No, it wasn't, but because they were moving. Had they renamed Highbury, I think people would have viewed it in a different light.
That is so ridiculous. Just step back and think. That is so ridiculous.
Okay, so if I called... So let's say... Sorry, I think it's... I'm not outing you here. I think people know you're a Liverpool fan. So if
I'd rather Liverpool stayed at Anfield and it was called something else than move to a new stadium that's called something else.
Okay, no. So if John W. Henry right now comes out and says, guess what? We can stay here for the next... we can stay here at Anfield for the next 10 years because Halliburton... Or no, better yet, Blackwater are coming in and they're sponsoring the stadium to the tune of 30 million. Or Philip Morris, right? Would you be happy with that?
I'm not saying I jump up and down, but I would rather that than move to a new stadium and have both a double whammy of a new name and a new stadium. If you can redevelop the stadium you've got, or as in Newcastle's case, your stadium is big enough and lovely enough. You've got a lovely stadium. Be happy.
Peter, there's been a bunch of new stadiums in the Midlands. Mm. Walkers and Pride Park
King
and so
Power.
On. Sorry?
King Power Stadium now, Leicester.
You say, what the hell is King Power?
It's the Leicester, the Thai owners. That's their what they work in.
Okay, but if I want to buy a product or a good or service from King Power, what do I have to do? Move to Thailand and get connected to the electrical grid?
It's the airport shops. It's where you go through. It's
the duty-free shops in Thailand are called King Power.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's what they are advertising. So nip over to Thailand, go through the customs, the duty-free, and pick up your King Power products.
Yeah, I know it's a globalized game and everything, but I just don't understand why a brand that isn't even for sale in this country, which is where football clubs get the vast majority of the revenues from, would want to advertise. Do we know how much they pay at Leicester?
No, it's things aren't that transparent at Leicester. I'm not sure how much they put into it for any naming rights. It's all part of the whole shirt, ground,
right,
entire club deal.
What are you going on about? The name, because the brand's not on sale in this country. You know the Premier League goes out to about 35, 40, right, maybe even more countries in,
what I'm
in the world.
But what I'm saying is I always look at, are things making commercial sense? So when Manchester United, because this has been a bugbear of mine, I think when it comes to sponsors, people often sign sponsorship contracts without any kind of valid commercial sense. They do it because some of these people who are in charge of sponsorship money, I think, either think like fans or have ulterior motives or aren't very clever or sometimes are too clever. So you tell me, right, when Manchester United were sponsored by AIG, that's obviously a global brand, Manchester United goes everywhere, whatever, right? Mm. The King Power Stadium in Leicester, right? Leicester are not in the top flight. I'm assuming Leicester's fan base in Thailand isn't enormous.
Well, they're hoping it will be.
But that's fine. But what? How does association with a stadium make me want to go? To duty free shop? And I might add something else, right? Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm not as familiar with Bangkok Airport as you are, for obvious reasons. But when you want to buy duty-free products at Bangkok Airport, at the terminal, Peter, are there like five different identical duty-free shops, and one of them is King Power and the other four are called something else, and so you would choose the King Power one?
They've got the monopoly on it.
They have the monopoly on it, right? Okay, so if I want to get my cheap booze or my cheap perfume at the airport in Bangkok, I have to go to King Power anyway, right?
Yes, you do.
Monopolies still advertise, Gab. It's about making people feel happy about purchasing through the monopoly and making the decision to buy or not buy. That is not commercial.
You know what we need to do one day? I want to get one of these sponsorship people on. They need to explain this to me, because to me, so much of this looks like voodoo and hocus pocus.
Why did Coca-Cola advertise?
Why?
Your argument. Why do they? Yeah. They don't need to.
It's an awareness up, isn't it?
It maintains brand awareness. No, but they do it because and there's substitute products.
Well, why wouldn't King Power do the same thing if they're looking to globalize and go big?
Because if you go down to the corner shop, there's 50 different types of soda. If you go to Bangkok Airport, you have to shop at King Power.
Well, maybe they're going to expand. I don't know. They've obviously done it for a reason. The name's out there. We're arguing about it now. So it's obviously making their brand even more powerful by letting people know.
Okay. Okay, so when your local chain of King Power opens up on your high street, please let us know. Okay, now how about some quick hits? For the first time in 5 years, David Beckham is included in Major League Soccer's Team of the Season. Allison, he's going out of contract. Your pal, Neil Warnock, says he won't sign him for QPR. I don't know if anybody actually asked him, but he's now been linked to Paris Saint-Germain. What do you think he should do, and what do you think he will do?
I think he should give back to American soccer. It is littered, the history of American soccer, with people who go there and make a lot of money and then turn their back on it, and it's part of the reason why it's never taken off the way it should. And I think he's hinted that he would like to be more involved, maybe even own a club, and I think he should definitely do that. And I think what he will do, I think he will do that eventually, but I think he's so focused on having one last hurrah, he will sign for someone glamorous and maybe not play enough, but that's what he'll do.
5 years, that's been a long enough sentence out there from his perspective. It's nearly the end of November, and no Premier League manager has yet been sacked, which I guess is good, because it means we hear less from Richard Bevan, unless, of course, when he's inventing things about Premier League owners abolishing relegation. But let's not go there. Peter, is this a coincidence, or is it a trend?
I think it's a trend. I think this is now the record length we've gone, isn't it, without a sacking, going to this stage in November without dismissing a manager. I think people have looked back and seen, well, if we go and sack Steve Keane now, what would we do with the team? Would we be able to keep them up? If we sack Martinez, who's done wonders for Wigan, sacking now might bump up results for a month, but then do we really have the players to keep them up? So I think this is a trend, yeah.
Barring a major act of God, the Republic of Ireland will be going to Euro 2012 following their 4-0 win in Estonia. Cass, do you like the scrappy counter-attacking version of your boys in green? And what would a good result at the Euros be?
Well, first and foremost, they've been fantastic in their qualifying campaign. He's made us very, very difficult to beat. Me and you had a chat the other night, and I think Trapattoni's done an amazing job considering a guy that took a wage reduction, made Ireland such a difficult team to play against. A good achievement. I think if they got out of the group, I think that'd be fantastic, because I do believe that no one will enjoy playing them. And there's also what we talked about with England. There is a real ethic about a unity within the group, which is fantastic to watch.
Match made in heaven. He was born on St. Patrick's Day, after all.
Oh, didn't know that.
You did not know that. Wow. Mm-hmm. There you go. A Japanese referee, Masaki Toma, became the first foreigner to take charge of an FA Cup game on Saturday as Brentford defeated Basingstoke 1-0. Alison, you are a qualified referee. Toma was part of a referee exchange, but should referees be allowed to go and ply their trade in other countries the way managers and players and, dare I say, journalists like myself do?
Yeah, they should. I think familiarity breeds, it probably doesn't breed contempt, but it can breed laziness. And I think it probably would keep Toma on his toes to see the game at a different pace with different attitudes and players thinking they can get away with different sorts of things. And I think it's a good reminder to the players to have a referee that they don't know, because you can sort of week in, week out, get used to thinking, well, I can get away with this and that. You know, the local referees we have, they sort of overlook this particular infringement. And to have someone who maybe goes by the book a bit more, it sort of reinforces that the rules exist.
I hope the Premier League are paying attention. You boast about having the best managers and the best players. How about bringing in the very best referees and breaking up Mike Riley's cartel? Wigan's Antolin Alcaraz has been suspended for spitting at an opponent. Peter, I'll just read a statement and you can comment. I find this absolutely hilarious. Now, this was on Wigan's website. I apologize to anyone connected to our football club for the offense and upset that my actions have caused. I reacted wrongly after being provoked, but I never meant to spit on an opposing player's. I was having a confrontation with Christoph Berra, and in wanting to show my frustration, my intention was to spit on the ground next to him, which was my way of answering the verbal abuse that I was receiving. Unfortunately, as you can see in the video evidence, my spit, instead of fighting the ground, regrettably struck Richard Stedman, I think he means Richard Stearman, so he can't even get the guy's name right, in the chest. And I apologize to him for this. He also added, I am hurting now because I know I cannot help my teammates in the next three games, and for that I am very sorry. Peter, Dave Whelan has called Alcaraz disgusting, or Alcaraz's actions disgusting. How do you try to spit at the ground and instead hit a 6'3" center half in the chest?
It just about sums up Wigan's accuracy on that day, but at least I suppose he hit a target. I don't know whether he should get an extra game ban for such a ridiculous comment. If you're gobbing in the vicinity of an opponent, you're very likely to hit him. It's such a load of baloney. I think he should ban more or go on the comedy circuit.
Fair enough. I just thought it was funny. I'm waiting for the day when somebody spits at an opponent and says, look, just be a man. All right, I spat at you. At least I didn't go and try to break your leg or kick you in the head or pee in your face, okay? And just end it there. Give me my ban and let's move on. Carlos Tevez goes off to Argentina, apparently, without the club's permission, which I guess isn't news, but Gordon Taylor has warned that Tevez may be on a self-destruct mission, which is news. Cass, you were a professional. Gordon Taylor seems to be sick of defending him, even though he's the head of the players' union. Are you going to defend your colleague?
No, he's on a self-destruct mission. Look, he's not playing football. And that's the bottom line. And if he goes back to Argentina, whatever reasons he's got, he shouldn't have signed a five-year deal at Manchester City if he wasn't happy to be prepared. Yeah, of course, money was the major reason why he's gone for the treasure. But I just find it, I hate when I see players literally be redundant and he's not playing. And I don't know the next time he is going to be playing. It's a very sad situation for everybody, including Man City, because Tevez has let himself down, all professional footballers down, because his actions have just, they've made everybody have a sour taste in their mouth.
Gab, here's one for you. Portugal are held to a scoreless draw in Bosnia. So, are we going to have a European Championships without Cristiano Ronaldo?
We might. Bosnia are a very good side. I mean, I think this is always the most delicately poised of the four playoffs. It was a horrible pitch over in Zenica in Bosnia, and Portugal blamed that. The reality, though, Portugal right now are a very disjointed side. Even though the individuals are good players, Bento isn't getting the best out of them. On top of that, he's fallen out very badly with Ricardo Carvalho and Jose Bisingua, who haven't been part of the team for a while. This is going to be a major, major failure if they come up short. That's all we've got time for this week. You can go to www.thetimes.co.uk. You'll find all your news, your gossip, your analysis, and your web chats. Mine's on Wednesday. Also, many of us are on Twitter. You can hit us up there, too. We look forward to hanging out with you. Hope you like hanging out with us. Till next week. Bye-bye.
The train is now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.